Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:08 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is November 14th. Now, I thought we'd kick off today and look at the price to flow chart for Bitcoin. This isn't something that I look at all that often, but there are times when it is, I think, rather important to just pay attention to because it is a very easily understandable graphic representation of just how important the 4 years halving cycle is in Bitcoin. So we can see that there's a heat map on the right-hand side, and it counts down the number of days to the next halving. So we can also then highlight that when you get into the light green to dark green territory, we've generally seen important lows, and we're in the light green territory now. So this is exactly the kind of time in the cycle when there will be downside surprises and there will be crises, and some of the most over-levered will go bust. And that's exactly what we're seeing. This bankruptcy of FTX, the cross holdings of the entity, and how they had been lending money into lots of other projects. And money they didn't have, by the way, and had no real idea of where all that money was going. So, this is obviously a great example of a Ponzi scheme, but it doesn't really say anything about the actual health of the base coin, Bitcoin being the ultimate cryptocurrency. What it does highlight is the paradox of decentralized finance that relies on a centralized infrastructure. That just doesn't make sense, but that is basically how exchanges work. In fact, this is the big challenge, is that buying cryptocurrency is difficult if you don't use an exchange. And mining cryptocurrency is expensive if you don't have know-how. So then you go to an exchange, but then by going to an exchange, you're then going back to a centralized infrastructure. So it really is a paradox. But it does come all the way back to the real point that Bitcoin is a liquidity barometer, and each of the really big moves on the upside has corresponded with a profound increase in the quantity of money in existence. So we can see this straight green line. It's well above where the price is right now. And if the outlook had remained intact, the price would have got up towards 100,000 and probably exceeded it. Then, when we get the next halving, the model implies that the peak in Bitcoin will be a million. Now, in order for Bitcoin to get to a million per Bitcoin, then the quantity of money printed will have to be 10 times larger than the money printed in response to the pandemic. So that's a lot of cash. And in order for that to occur, there's going to have to be a really big scare. So it's not all that difficult to figure out what that really big scare is going to be. But it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to get it, because the trend in Bitcoin is less consistent now than it had been in the past, because the price is now dipping down into the underlying range, and it has never done that before. Now, the only big consistency characteristic that still exists is that there is no one who's ever bought Bitcoin and held it for 4 years has lost money. And if the price today were about $1,000, then that would be true, but it isn't. In fact, the price was around $6,000 4 years ago. So we're at around 16,000 right now, and that would suggest that there's plenty of room in which to consolidate. Now, let's just pull that price up then. Bitcoin has been really very volatile, but that's not really unusual. It's the period of inactivity prior to this volatility is more remarkable. And this is exactly the point where a crypto winter is to be expected. The next halving will be in April of 2024. Before the halving, it's reasonable to expect the low will have already been put in. And after the halving, we'll see prices advance. Now, I personally think it's unlikely that Bitcoin is going to trade up to a million. I think more likely is we'll have a big surge in activity following the halving, just like we've had every other time, because the market is conditioned to expect that, but that it will not be as rewarding. The only possible way that it would be that rewarding is if we have really do have World War III, and money printing goes into an accelerated phase to fund a war effort. And that's not impossible, but certainly it would be money printing on a scale similar to that would be required. Now, when we think about the size of central bank balance sheets right now, well, they've been contracting most of the year, and then it went up last week because the dollar pulled back. So I think that's an important characteristic. The dollar has rolled over. That's going to start supplying additional liquidity. Then China announced over the weekend that they are going to provide additional liquidity to the property sector. So they are also going to reclassify their COVID zero policy. Now you can see here that the size of the global assets or the central bank balance sheets internationally contracted all year, and that was entirely dependent on the dollar index. So the dollar index trended downwards. Excuse me, dollar index trended upwards all year and pulled back exceptionally violently last week. So that flattered the value of the dollar, but then it devalued the assets sitting on central bank balance sheets everywhere else. Now the dollar steadied a little in here today, but I really do emphasize that it was a little, and it is right in the region of the 200-day moving average. So we might see some consolidation, but this is an awfully big downward dynamic. It stands out on the chart. So it is quite likely that the lows are in for gold as well, and gold prices were pretty much unchanged in here today. So this has been a powerful rebound, and it is back above the 200-day moving average. So this is really quite positive, and it's looking like a failed downside break out of that range, and therefore the balance of probabilities is that within the next couple of months, the price will be back in the region of 2000 and might even break on the upside. Now, we also had, with the dollar rolling over last week, a significant rebound on stocks. But then we had competing debates or competing statements coming out from Fed officials over the last 48 hours. Over the weekend, we had one Fed official saying that interest rates need to go up. Then we had Lil Brainard, vice chair of the Fed today, saying that they might look at beginning to reduce the size of the interest rate hikes at the next meeting. So prices went up first, but now the S&P 500 is right in the region of the 200-day moving average. So to go higher from here, we would need to see something clearly bullish. Now, when we look at corporate profits, then they've been really quite steady. And with the majority of companies that have reported quarterly earnings so far, they've been quite positive. So they've continued to grow, and the growth expectations have been managed lower. So the stock market has been reasonably steady. But then we have layoffs that are increasing. So Amazon is going to be firing a significant number of people, even though they're hiring right now seasonal workers in their many distribution centers, they're starting to leave people go at headquarters, and particularly in R&D and HR. And the 200-day moving average is falling down through the 1,000-day moving average. So we might yet see a reversionary rally. But the bigger challenge right now isn't so much about whether earnings were okay in this quarter, but rather, are earnings going to be able to continue to hold up? I think that's by far the more pressing question. So when we think then about this short covering rally that's been underway, it probably does have further to go on the upside. The Nasdaq 100 is only just beginning to push back up into the overhead trading range, and it hasn't quite yet unwound its oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average. And then the Russell 2000 has been mostly range bound for the last 6 months. It did not break downwards, and it has rebounded as well. So we're looking at somewhat steadier action right now. Banks have been setting money aside to allow for losses. So the banking sector is doing somewhat better, and it is back above the 200-day moving average. The area where banks have been setting aside cash to allow for losses is highest in Europe. And if they don't have a very cold winter, then that's going to free up quite a bit of cash in Europe. So the banking sector there is looking somewhat steadier. And it is, I think, rather interesting that the Europe Stoxx 600, which includes the UK, Sweden, Norway, and Denmark, is looking eerily similar to the S&P 500. It's right in the region of the 200-day moving average and testing the sequence of lower rally highs. We've had a powerful short covering rally over the last 6 weeks. Now the question is, how much further are we going to go on the upside? What I found especially interesting today was that oil prices, having rebounded really quite impressively on Thursday and Friday, came straight back down again. So I really find this at a very difficult market right now. Every time I feel like prices are going to go on the upside, they come back down. And every time I think they're going to go down, they go back up. But the reality is that we're right in the middle of this range. And the range has been forming now for the last 7 weeks, and it's holding between $90 and $100. There's a lot of argument going on. There's certainly people on the bullish side are very keen to think that there's going to be a very bad energy crisis, that prices are going to surge higher because the world simply cannot do without Russian oil, and the strategic reserve sales that the USA has been engaged in are going to end this month or the beginning of next month. And then that the energy situation in Europe is still very uncertain. But the other side of that is we're looking at a global recession. So it's not just about supply, it's also about demand. And the demand side is likely to be more difficult to deal with. So certainly there are two competing arguments, and they're relatively well balanced right now, and is why we have this range. But let's just go back and think about the very inert period of trading we had in Bitcoin. When the break came, it was exceptionally volatile. And I suspect that is exactly what we're going to have with oil prices as well. Then natural gas is also really very volatile. But the price today was pretty much unchanged. The Freeport LNG export facility is going to be closed for at least another month. So they are still having difficulty getting their repairs done and getting their export license reapproved. Now, it would seem to me to be a politically wise move to delay exports of LNG when there is a shortage of gas in the Atlantic Northeast. In the USA, and they certainly need more gas in that region. Of course, they also need to build more pipelines, and there is absolutely no appetite for that whatsoever. The Alerian MLP ETF pulled back in here today. So right in the region of the upper side of this range that's been forming now for most of the last 18 months, and not quite yet below the $40 area. It could yet steady from here. The challenge, of course, is that a lot of these businesses are really quite highly levered, and it really then is a question of, are we going to see bond yields continuing to compress? And I suspect that we will. That if we look at the only examples that we have, then central banks reducing the size of their balance sheets and engaging in quantitative tightening result in deflationary forces. So that would imply that yields go up first because investors are worried about the central bank selling bonds. Then, because deflation starts to overwhelm the economy, they start buying those bonds and yields compress. And I suspect that is exactly what we're seeing now. Bonds went up a lot, or bond yields went up a lot. Now they're starting to come back down, and the trend is certainly less consistent than it was. Therefore, we should be, I think, looking for the potential that yields are going to surprise on the downside, that is going to be in response to weaker economic growth, that that will then impact corporate profits. That's why we still haven't seen yet this extension of the short covering rally that began last week. Then let's think about some of the companies that have really sold off aggressively. So Meta was in positive territory today, but it's really very low. So the kinds of companies that have the most potential to rebound are those that have had the biggest declines. And Netflix has also been steadier in here today, but it also pulled back exceptionally, or in a very exceptional manner, from the peak in 2021 to the low earlier this year. And the price is now holding in the region of the 200-day moving average. It is looking likely that Tesla is going to start manufacturing its Cybertruck. Now the big question is, how are people going to afford it when we are looking at a slowing economic environment? The price of the share is still hovering here in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now let's turn our attention to Asia. If the dollar is going to continue to extend its decline, then that's positive for emerging markets. And the Shanghai Property Index was up in a dynamic manner today. It's now back in the middle of the range that's been forming for the last 4 or 5 years. Now the big question is, what's next? When we look at the H-share index in Hong Kong, then it's unwinding the short-term oversold condition and back in the region of the lower side of the overhead trading range. So the Chinese government has announced additional measures to support the property sector. But what we're going to have to see is more people willing to take the plunge and start buying properties. And consumers might yet be a little gun-shy. So that would suggest that we're going to have to see some time before confidence returns. And that suggests that we've had a volley of new support measures, but they can't be the last ones. And then some of the property developers have rebounded rather emphatically. So those that have already gone bust are the cautionary tale. Long form has doubled over the course of the last 3 weeks. Now it's testing the sequence of lower rally highs. I think it's exceptionally likely that we move into a type 3 bottom here. It's not like we're going to see the kind of return to the go-go days of Chinese property developers, but at least they're going to stop them from going bust. Then the technology sector in China has been under a great deal of duress, and it's also rebounding. So Tencent has pulled back from about 750 to 200. It's now at 260, but it's still in a downtrend. It has not yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs. So certainly the action we've seen in Hong Kong is encouraging. There is the strong likelihood that the low is in, and valuations have certainly improved. But at the same time, these measures are more likely to ensure that companies don't end up going bust rather than outright support for a new market-based economy. And then India has been steadier, steadying, I should say, in the region of the peaks and holding the move above 18,000. Well, it's India which has the demographics and certainly a more market-friendly environment at present. Then Indonesia has been flying under the radar politically, and the index is hovering here in the region of the 200-day moving average, but it was in negative territory in here today. So we had a very strong rebound on Wall Street last week, and we had very positive news for support and liquidity provision from China, but we didn't have big moves in much of Asia. And the Asia Dollar Index is unwinding its short-term oversold condition, but coming off of really quite depressed levels. So it's very likely that emerging markets are going to start performing, but that we're still heading into a recessionary environment. They're not going to be immune from selling pressure internationally, but that they are likely to rebound first. So it's certainly a sector that's worth paying attention to because there will be opportunities. And the reality is that at the interest expense on the US government's debt is approaching 550 billion. And spending discipline has gone completely out the window. And eventually that is going to contribute to significant dollar weakness. So we've had the big downward dynamic and it's broken the trend, but it's not trending downwards yet. We might yet see some additional pause and consolidation. But then let's come back and think about the precious metals. They do look likely to benefit in this environment. And silver has popped back above the 200-day moving average, so it is starting to improve once more. And silver is in the second psychological perception stage of the bull market. This is exactly the point where it should outperform gold, and it does look likely that that is going to be the case. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.